Next, I talk with Nancy Hollander, a historian and psychoanalyst, about right-wing populism and the appeal of Donald Trump, neoliberalism, and the global economy. Welcome to KABU, Nancy Hollander.
Thank you very much. It's good to be with you, Jen.
Well, you've worked for many years as a Latin American scholar, historian, psychoanalyst, and social theorist, including with your most recent book, Uprooted Minds, Surviving the Politics of Terror in the Americas. And I hope we can talk some about the insights, particularly how you draw on psychoanalytic insights in that project this morning. But let's start with this notion of terror as a political motion and a strategy. And of course, there is a lot of terror in the air these days that's palpable in political commentary about the Trump campaign. So perhaps it would be a good place to start with your assessment of this form of reactionary populism. You've written a lot about authoritarian movements, particularly in Latin America, Argentina. What's old and what's new in the right-wing rhetoric of this campaign?
I think there are certain features of the right-wing campaign that you find in right-wing populism wherever it appears, especially in the developed capitalist world, and for that matter, even in Latin America. And there's been a lot of attention in the mass media paid to the particular idiosyncrasies of the narcissism of Trump's character. But I think what's much more interesting is to try to understand what's going on at this particular historical moment. And I think there are many things that come together. First of all, I think that the people who are vulnerable to listening to him are people who have really been hurt by neoliberal capitalism, by some of the things that even Trump, in his more reasonable moments, if we can call them that, is able to articulate. And that is something he's also been guilty of. That is the abandonment of working people in this country by the multinational corporations that go all over the world looking for the cheapest labor possible and global markets. So their people have been hurt over the last, I would say, 30 years, and decline in their life conditions and in their possibilities for actualizing what they consider to be the American dream. If they work hard enough and they're honest and they put their nose to the grindstone, they will be able to raise themselves out of their working class origins, for many of them, into the middle class, or at least stay in the middle class. And that hasn't proven to be the case. And I think we're seeing both on the left and the right the legacy of Occupy, a progressive movement that was able to cut through the myths in this country that we live in a society without entrenched classes, et cetera, that we have economic and political democracy, and they're 1%, 99%, to just summarize it in their own words, was really a very potent vehicle for raising people's consciousness. And I think we see the legacy of that in certainly the Bernie campaign among the millennials on the left. And it's also contributed to people's understandable rage about what's happened to them over the last 30, 40 years.
Let's talk a bit about the different grounds for support, not only for movements that mobilize fear, but also anger and outrage. Many reject the comparison of the Trump and the Bernie Sanders campaign for obvious reasons. His campaign was organized around social justice, including marginalized people, and Trump's campaign is the opposite. But, you know, there's been a long history of psychoanalysts, including with the rise of fascism and people like Theodore Adorno, who tried to understand the popular base of particularly movements of the right, fascistic movements, authoritarian movements. So how do you understand the basis of this support?
The person that I look to mostly is the Italian political philosopher Antonio Gramsci, who talked about hegemony. And I think the reason the right wing aspect of the disaffection has been so powerful is because it works within the context of the hegemonic social symbols that people identify with. And since this country is riddled with racism and sexism and misogyny and homophobia, they've always been used as ways of mobilizing, especially white people who are feeling disenfranchised, and to reorient their understandable rage and anger away from the systemic causes toward people that are more vulnerable than they are. So I think that explains a lot of the attraction and the mobilization on the right.
Particularly with then displaced white working class among white working class men.
That's right. So as a psychoanalyst, when I am watching Trump and imagining what it feels like for a white working class male to listen to his, it's irrational and it's riddled with contradictions, but this is a man who defies the establishment, who defies convention, who articulates in the most crude and enraged way their anxieties and their hatreds, and he makes it legitimate. I think that the identification with him is really very powerful. He's made it, and through him and through his discourse of omnipotence, they can feel powerful.
You try to empathize with this position of the nature of that identification, and it's perhaps hard for many observers who find him so laughable. And for a long time, he was kind of a standard nightly stock comic material until it became no joke. But you're saying there's a fantasy he projects, a fantasy of power and manhood.
That's right.
It's hard to separate the parody of him from him as a buffoon.
Well, that's for us folks who aren't taken in by him. But I think the people who represent his following, he's also blown the class alliance between the absolutely wealthy in this country, in the Republican Party, and the disenfranchised, down and out folks that represent the base of the Republican Party.
It's a symptom of a crisis within the Republican Party. He is a symptom.
That's right. So the people who are left, who are the voters, who constitute whatever it is, whatever poll you look at, but it's a significant percentage of the electorate. I don't sympathize with them. I feel empathy for them, but I don't identify with the dynamics that are going on. I think they're able to employ splitting psychological disavowal. That is, they may know certain things like, oh, yeah, he does produce all of what he makes overseas, so how can he be critical? Those contradictions, I think, they can know it in one moment and get rid of it in their minds in the next moment. We call it disavowal because they can extrude anything that seems like a contradiction to the benefits he promises them if they follow him.
And perhaps that is an aspect of the human mind, our ability to carry contradictions and cognitive dissonance and all of the defenses attached to them. We'll have you on the show again to have an ongoing psychoanalytic interpretation of the campaign and the ongoing political life of this country. You've been on the Old Mole before, and you've been also an activist in your own area, radio activist. This is our membership drive week, and can you say a bit about what's important about community radio and supporting community radio in just the last few seconds we have building a better world?
Right. This is the only place, I think, in the United States, or one of the few, where people can turn a knob and get these kinds of critical, in-depth discussions about what's going on in our world that imperils social justice and even the future of the planet. So my hat's off to you guys, and I encourage everybody listening to give what they can, because this kind of public radio broadcasting is really important.
Well, thank you so much, Nancy Hollander, for being with us today. And our on our website, we'll also have a post about your book, Uprooted Minds, Surviving the Politics of Terror in the Americas, as timely as ever, 2014 book that is a fascinating read, both psychologically and as a historical work. So thanks so much for being with us today, Nancy Hollander.
Okay, thanks, Jen. Bye-bye.